Hey, podcast friends. If you love our podcast and want to help support us to continue making cool shit, consider joining our Patreon community. Get early access to each episode, a monthly hangout on Zoom, custom answers to your questions in exclusive Patreon videos, and much, much more. Head on over to patreon.com/conversationswithcreators to become a patron today. Your support means the world to us. Now on to the episode. Hey, podcast friends. If you love our podcast and want to help support us to continue making cool shit, consider joining our Patreon community. Get early access to each episode, a monthly hangout on Zoom, custom answers to your questions in exclusive Patreon videos, and much, much more. Head on over to patreon.com/conversationswithcreators to become a patron today. Your support means the world to us. Now on to the episode.
I didn't eat or drink water for 4 days. This was in smack dab summer. It was 104 degrees, some record-breaking heat wave that year. And I had to cut weight on my damn birthday, July 1st, and weigh in and stuff because my fight was July 2nd. And me and my teammates, we were in this car and like driving 5.5 hours up to Washington, D.C., like stuck in traffic with the heat blasting in 104 degree weather. We're all in sweats and, you know, got towels wrapped around us with like 2 hoodies, 2 sweatpants, 2 pairs of socks, and just like cutting whatever weight. And I stopped sweating because my body was so depleted. And I'm like in the sauna doing burpees and jump rope and with all the stuff on. And I was only 1.2 pounds off. And I mean, obviously her coroner was like, oh yeah, you gotta cut the weight because their technique is to make you as weak as possible. Right. So they made me cut the 1.2 pounds rather than fighting out a catch weight. And next thing you know, like I had to cut the, I slept in a sauna suit and I cut the weight all the way up until 2 hours before my fight.
Oh my God. You didn't eat anything for 4 days before
or water. I didn't even drink water.
Oh my God.
Like I could have died.
Yeah, that's so bad. Great quote I heard from actually the first episode of this was work begets work. So the more that you're putting stuff out, the more opportunities can come to you.
Exactly. Exactly. Especially when it's a creative field. Like the creating never stops.
Right.
And it's like I think another thing why I enjoy recreating so much because you keep having all these little projects or goals, little mini goals. And every time you accomplish one, it's like, oh, look, here we go. This is my thing. And you just add into the bank of your life. And it's good to be able to look back at it. It's good to be able to learn from it. And the creating is a never ending process. So it's something that is very enjoyable to have. And when even worst case scenario, if nothing comes from it, it's like I can look back at my life and be like, you know, my life was very fun and rich because
you made cool shit.
Yeah, exactly. You made cool shit. I didn't happy with that, you know?
So the big question is this: how are creators like us who aren't built for the 9-to-5, for the people who put their passion before them being comfortable? How do we turn that passion into a living that pays the bills and a life that we love? That is the question. This podcast will give you the answers. My name is Noah Mittman, and welcome to Conversations with Creators.
Well, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Creators. And I am so happy to be joined by, is it Zeta Zhang? Zeta Zhang?
Zeta
is always close.
Yeah, it's confusing. Everyone's like, is Zeta or is Zeta? It's Zeta.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you are a wrestler, an actress, a dancer, all of the things physical. And that's pretty freaking sweet. Can you kind of tell us first? Let's kind of start. I mean, I think you're most well known for wrestling. And tell me kind of what inspired that, kind of your journey into pro wrestling and what got you interested in the first place there.
So my grandma and I were really close. I grew up with her. She took care of me because my parents, they're like immigrant parents. They were too busy working, so they were never really home. My grandma was the one that took care of me, and she only spoke Mandarin, so she wasn't able to watch anything on TV in the U.S. And the only thing that she could watch and understand was pro wrestling. And
nice.
At the time, she watched WCW, WWF, but she also did watch some collegiate as well as Olympic wrestling as well. So I grew up watching it with her. This was like our bonding time. And yeah. So I've always been interested in it as well as just martial arts in general. It's something I've been exposed to since a young age. So that whole realm was something that always interested me, but it was not anything that I ever had the confidence to pursue. Until later on, I ended up going to college, and the city that I went to was really unsafe. Yeah. It is like the opposite of where I'm from. Where I was born, it was actually a really safe city. And when I went off to college, that place was considered like number one murder city in the U.S.
Oh my God.
1 year in a row. Yeah, Richmond, Virginia. And when I got there, it was still ranked top four, but the city itself is such a small, like, condensed city. So everything that happens is literally a street away from you. So I went there really naive, thinking nothing's going to happen to me. And my first year there, it was really scary because I got close to possibly getting gang raped. And
oh, God.
Yeah. It was like my first Halloween there, and this was before GPS units on the phone.
Yeah.
And I remember I was trying to get to this party that my friend was at, and she was giving me directions on the phone. And I was close by, but she didn't know whether I should take left or right. So she told me to stay there, and she was going to get one of her friends to come get me. So I talked to this dude on the phone. He said, stay there, he'll come get me, but I was close. So 5 minutes pass, I see this guy pull up, and he waves this hand out the sunroof window for me to follow him. And I just said to him, hey, did I just talk to you on the phone? And he goes, yeah, the party's over here. Mind you, I never mentioned anything about a party. I just asked if I talked to him on the phone. And so yeah. I'm thinking this is the dude. I'm following him. Next thing you know, there's another car behind me that I noticed with four dudes in the back. And they lead me down some dark alley. They trap me between the two cars. And at the time, I didn't really like register that I was in danger. I was just thinking, oh, it's kind of weird. But when we pulled up, I was just thinking, oh, maybe they're also going to the party. So I didn't think too much of it. I called my friend. I told her I'm in the back of an alleyway. And she said she came out to go look for me and she couldn't find me. And what seemed like 5 whole minutes, I was here like flashing my lights, trying to figure out where she was. And then I started getting a weird feeling because I remember looking at my rearview mirror and seeing the lights all turned off, the four dudes in the back, like slouch, just like waiting, like they were waiting for the dude in the front to do something.
Yeah.
Because my dumbass, at the time, I was, you know, very naive. My door was open. My window was rolled down. The guy came out. The guy in the front came out, stood like 3 feet away from me. And I'm asking him, is this where the party's at? And he goes, yeah, he lies and says it is. And so I'm here talking to my friend, still trying to figure it out. And then halfway through, I'm starting to feel like a sick feeling in my stomach, like something's wrong. But I didn't know how to get out of the situation. So I just kept stalling for time. And I asked him again, is this where the party's at? After the third time of me asking the same question, my friend overheard his voice and she goes, who's that? And as soon as she says, who's that? Like, I lost my cool because everything just like hit me. And I realized that this guy was some random stranger that's, you know, not the one that's supposed to come get me. So I start freaking out. I'm like, what the fuck? Is this not the guy that you said that was going to come get me? And obviously he's standing right there. He heard me. He knew his cover was blown. Then he got real aggressive and he goes, what? You don't believe me? You don't believe me? If you don't believe me, go back where you came from. And he got all up like right next to me. I mean, my windows rolled down and he could have easily like yanked me out the car and the other dudes could have came out. And I think I really got lucky that night because one, I was on the phone with my friend. I think that kind of made them a little bit more hesitant to do anything because she was on the phone. And two, I was so lucky. This alleyway was so narrow. It was only like wide enough for one car. So I'm trapped between the two cars. There's no way I could get out. But it just so happened that the building that I was parked next to was shorter than the other two buildings. So because of that, I was able to do a C turn out. And from that experience that day, it scared me so much. It got me into realizing that I needed to teach martial arts. So I ended up going to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because Jiu-Jitsu was the closest thing to pro wrestling. And wrestling at the time, you know, I didn't know the difference between pro wrestling and wrestling. I just saw it all as wrestling. So because in college, you can't just jump on a wrestling team without, you know, being a wrestler for most of your life to get onto the team, I ended up going for Jiu-Jitsu. So because of Jiu-Jitsu, I ended up, you know, gaining confidence because I was training a lot and ended up having my coaches convince me to do a tournament. And after I won my tournaments, you know, I fell in love with the sport.
Yeah.
Then I ended up going to MMA shortly after, like a year later, because I was following one of my coaches to the gym that he was teaching at. And that gym was an MMA gym. And I went there without any intentions of doing MMA. I was really just there for jiu-jitsu. But because I was paying for classes, I was like, well, I might as well work out and everything because I'm already paying for this one price. So I can use it as a workout. And next thing you know, my the head coach, the MMA coach, and the owner of the gym saw me training. And he ended up coming to me trying to get me to do an MMA fight. And I remember telling him, like, I'm just here for self-defense. I don't want to fight. I don't want to compete. I don't want to hurt anyone, you know. But I actually ended the game tricked for my first MMA fight, which was crazy because he kept bugging me like every day for a month and a half, telling me, oh, you should fight. You should fight. And I kept telling him no. And then one day I just got really annoyed and I told him, I'll think about it. Just skim off my back. And so then the day after that, he comes to me and he goes, oh, well, there's a fight coming up in 3 weeks. Mind you, that is no time to prepare for your first fight. And he's having me fight up two weight classes because I was so small back then. There wasn't any girls for me to fight. And then he said, no pressure. Just train really hard for 2 weeks. If you don't feel up to it, you can back out at any time. So I was thinking, okay. So a week and a half into it, I'm training. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, hell no. I don't want to do this. So after training one day, I went up to him and I was like, hey, coach, can I come talk to you about something? And he goes, oh, yeah. By the way, they did an article about in the newspaper and the magazine about your upcoming fight. And I was like, are you serious? Like, what the fuck? Now, like,
I have to, right?
No, because of that, I felt pressured into taking this fight. And it was like such a roller coaster of emotions. It was like so much bullshit that happened for this fight. But, you know, I didn't know shit. Like, all I knew was jiu-jitsu at the time, and it was gi jiu-jitsu. It wasn't even, like, grappling. And also, I didn't know any wrestling. I didn't know any striking. I literally learned jab, cross, knee, elbow, like, within 3 weeks. And same with wrestling. And, of course, I'm going against a girl who's a striker that her boyfriend owns a gym and is her coach. I'm like, are you serious? I'm going up against her. Like, she's two weight classes bigger than me. And then having to take this fight, like, with so little notice, I go in there, and because she knows I am a jiu-jitsu girl, she, like, knew how to stuff all my takedowns, and my takedowns were shit anyways to begin with. So it was like, but I had to go through all that. But luckily, because I was not willing to give up after everything I went through, and this bitch, like, I was literally on my period the day of weigh-ins, and and she decided to kick me in the uterus, like, during the fight. Yeah, so it was, like, real fucked up. And the thing was, like, I can gain weight really easy. At the time, I was only 118 pounds, like, 115 to 118, which means I should be at fighting at 105. That should be my proper weight class. But I had to fight at 125, which means the girls are cutting down from, like, 140 to 145. And so that's two weight classes up. And might, you know, back in the day, no one knew anything about fight science. And it was mainly all wrestlers in my gym. So they don't know anything about like proper weight cutting and gaining weight either. Their whole thing is just losing weight really unhealthy and cutting water weight and stuff. So, and starving themselves. So they had this idea that because I have to go up the weight class, I should eat a lot to try and gain muscle. 3 weeks is no time to gain any muscle.
Yeah.
So I ate a ton and I went up to 133 within 3 weeks. And I was just 133 of fat at the time. And then next thing you know, I had to cut this weight down, which was difficult, especially when I was on my period because my body's holding on water weight. I've never had to do a cut before like this. So because of that, I remember I was cutting weight. I didn't eat or drink water for 4 days. This was in smack dab summer. It was 104 degrees, some record-breaking heat wave that year. And I had to cut weight on my damn birthday, July 1st, and weigh in and stuff because my fight was July 2nd. And me and my teammates, we were in this car and like driving 5.5 hours up to Washington, D.C., like stuck in traffic with the heat blasting in 104 degree weather. We're all in sweats and, you know, got towels wrapped around us with like 2 hoodies, 2 sweatpants, 2 pairs of socks, and just like cutting whatever weight. And I stopped sweating because my body was so depleted. And I'm like in the sauna doing burpees and jump rope and with all the stuff on. And I was only 1.2 pounds off. And I mean, obviously her coroner was like, oh yeah, you gotta cut the weight because their technique is to make you as weak as possible. Right. So they made me cut the 1.2 pounds rather than fighting out of catch weight. And next thing you know, like I had to cut the, I slept in a sauna suit and I cut the weight all the way up until 2 hours before my fight.
You didn't eat anything for 4 days before
we're water. I didn't even drink water.
Oh my god.
Like I could have died.
Yeah, that's so bad.
Yeah, it was so bad. And then like I went and did this fight and this bitch like kicking me in the uterus when I'm on my period. And the whole time I was just thinking to myself, I did not go through all this bullshit to come to
where.
Right. So I did not go down. Like even though she's technically more skilled than me, like I won off of sheer willpower because I was not willing to go down.
Yeah.
And so I ended up winning that fight. And after that, I was just like, you know, I think I actually really enjoy this. So I started pursuing my MMA career. And next thing you know, from my MMA circle is what got me the connection to WWE. Like I never thought I would have that opportunity. I thought the only people that got hired in WWE was like Olympic wrestlers, or at the very, very least, you got to be like a state champion of a college wrestler. You know, I didn't have any of that background, so I didn't think it was ever a possibility. But the fact that they even gave me a chance, I was like, yes, I'm going to take it. I went through the tryout and got through the tryout, and that's how I ended up becoming a pro wrestler.
That's amazing. What a journey on that.
Yeah, it was crazy.
So you got to become a pro wrestler. What have been some of your most memorable kind of moments or matches in your career with that so far?
I would say probably the most memorable was my time in China. I was wrestling against this girl, Maserati, and it was just us two. So we wrestled each other multiple times every single week. I was there on tour for like 3.5 months. So it was this really well-known company, OWE. It was like they were like on the buzz and supposed to be the next WWE. They were supposed to be the WWE of Asia.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, you know, I think there's some money laundering stuff that happened. That's why the company is not doing so well anymore. Mm-hmm. At the time when we were there, we had some really great matches together. We just got chemistry. She's really easy to work with. Like, we are...
Did you say Margot Robbie?
No, Maserati.
Maserati.
Yeah, Maserati. So
you cut out for like, if I was like, there's no way.
Oh, no. Maserati.
Maserati, yeah, got it.
We wrestled each other, and there's been a storyline that's been building for months. And because of that, the the matches are so much more meaningful because, you know, I'm a baby. She's a heel. She's got her boyfriend at the time that was her, like, valet that was always cheating. And it was just, like, this whole storyline building and building to where it is was very emotional because it took a lot of, like, we, even though we were there, like, 3.5 months, like, we literally wrestled, like, a year's worth of storyline.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
And so when we finally had our final match there at the end of our tour, like, it had been building to a point where, you know, I almost won, but then something happened unexpectedly where, you know, at this point, my body's been injured, my knee's been attacked and stuff like that, to end up losing again. I actually legit cried. It was very emotional, and I legit cried for real. And because of that, like, the people in the crowd, there were people in the crowd crying because it was such an emotional match. So that, I would
say, you cut to the truth of it. Emotion speaks no matter what, even if it's kind of a, you know, you know generally what the storyline is, you know, it's still, you still are putting your body on the line and your emotions on the line. So that makes total sense that you're that, you know, you being that invested is what brought the audience along with you.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to get that when, you know, you just have like one match, some random match here and there, you know, but this thing's, you know, been building. And because we also have such good chemistry and we play it off each other with our ideas, it really was my favorite match. Yeah. Unfortunately, what sucks is, you know, Chinese internet and U.S. internet is not even connected at all. And they have yet given me that footage.
Right.
So I don't actually even have footage of it, which is such a shame.
Is there any way you could, like, work in back channels to get it?
I tried. I've tried for years. They've been being asked about it, didn't give me the matches. I don't know why. I don't know why they feel the need that they have to keep a secret and not give me the footage. So I'm not sure.
Release it.
Yeah, seriously. So those are my favorite. That would be my favorite match. Like,
yeah.
Other than that, I would say I really enjoyed my matches in Bloodsport. The two matches in Bloodsport, it was a lot of fun just because it was very, it's very MMA style. There was very little planning. It was mainly just on the fly. And I got to work with people who also knew MMA. So because of that, or like jiu-jitsu, I could just like flow with them. Nothing ever had to be talked about. And I felt like I could really be creative and be myself. And because of that, I'm able to just, I don't have to focus on the moves. I could just focus on the crowd, focus on the storyline rather than have to be like, all right, what's the next move?
Right.
Especially here in the Indies, I notice everyone just wants to do so much. And that's really not my style at all. Like, I'm more so about the storyline because I started with WWE. So I was trained to tell a story.
Yeah.
And also because my background is MMA, you know, it's in my muscle memory to do these moves and I don't have to think too much about it. Whereas if it's pro wrestling stuff, you know, I haven't had as many years compared to MMA. So it takes a little bit of more thinking rather than something that comes more natural to me.
That makes total sense. I mean, I feel like MMA, you got the more kind of nuanced moves, whereas with the wrestling, it's very big, the huge play to the crowd kind of, it's just different styles of movement.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So other than being a wrestler, you are also an actress and a dancer. So what kind of drew you into the acting world, and has that impacted your other skills at all?
Well, one, I wouldn't really consider myself a dancer. I'm not a pro or anything. Like, I enjoy dancing. The most pro thing I ever did was be hired to go-go dance at clubs. That's about it.
Hey, listen, I've also, not go-go dance, but I've been hired to break dance at clubs, and the fact that I was getting any money to dance at all kind of cracked me up.
Yeah, it's like awesome. That's cool. Break dance. That's cool.
I mean,
yeah.
I guess you do one flip and like everybody, you know, that everybody's like, whoa, but I was like, that's all I got.
I mean, that's pretty badass. I always wish I could break dance. I mean, I enjoy dance. It's, I would say I just love art. I love all forms of art. And, you know, I started with traditional art, and later throughout the years, I end up finding out other types of art, like performance art. And because of that, I end up loving so many different medias and mediums of art. And so I would say that acting has always kind of been there.
Yeah.
Because I used to do music, actually. So my first love was drawing, traditional art. Second love was singing. So I did music for a long time. And with music, it comes with a lot of acting as well, for music videos and things like that. So it always seemed to come pretty natural.
Yeah.
And I see it more so as a way of telling my story. I don't really think of it as acting. It's just putting, I mean, I guess I'm very lucky that I've experienced so much in my life. I tell people I feel like I've lived 7 different lifetimes already, at least. Seeing stuff from one end of the spectrum and being on the other side of the spectrum as well, giving me that range. So for me, acting is just being myself. I'm tapping into what I've experienced in life and putting that out there for people to see, and it's just recalling that memory.
Yeah.
So it's something I really enjoy, because in a way it's almost like therapy. It, you know, back in the day, their therapy isn't such a big thing as it is nowadays, and especially being from an Asian background, like, we don't believe in therapy and mental health. There's no such thing. You know, growing up, I got bullied most of my life, and I had no one to talk to. I'm the only child. My parents didn't understand. I didn't have any friends. My English wasn't that great, even though I was born in the U.S. Like, the only thing I could do was journal. I just journaled most of my life, and I just talked to myself a lot. So having to be in a position where I have to pull up these feelings, because I've learned to block out my feelings a lot as a child, but having to pull out these feelings, it's almost like I'm facing my fears, and it's a type of therapy, but I'm using it in a positive way for something that I enjoy.
Absolutely.
So I really enjoy acting, and that's probably, as much as I enjoy the physical, like martial arts side of wrestling, I think I more so enjoy the acting side of wrestling.
Yeah.
So that's more so my thing, and which is why I'm also transitioning to acting. And I've been lucky enough to be signed with a great agent. And
congrats.
So agency, thank you. So right now it's, you know, unfortunately I was signed literally right before, only a few months before the strike happened. And now that it's over, you know, I'm focusing on that.
Yeah.
And also because my body is banged up from years of martial arts and pro wrestling. So this is the next phase of my career. You know, I'm still doing wrestling because I enjoy it, and I'm still going to keep doing it as much as I can. But at some point, I'm going to have to transition over. And this is my transitioning phase now.
Well, and it seems, you know, how we met is through kind of the Master Ken mutual friend. And you've been in, you know, quite a few of his videos. Is that kind of been a nice transition for you, because it's still martial arts based, but it's, you know, you get to stretch a little bit more of the acting chops on that?
Oh man, it's like perfect. I was so happy when he followed me on Instagram, because I've been following this dude, like, I've been watching his videos since he came out.
Yeah, like, yeah, me too.
Like, and at the time, known in the martial arts community, like, not as big as where he is now, but in the martial arts community, everyone like knew of him, and I just thought he was so funny and just so good at what he does. And then finally, when I had the chance to collaborate with him, I was just like, hell yeah, this is like perfect. I would be doing this even if I wasn't acting. Like, It's just such a cool thing. And upon working with him, like, he is so easy to work with, and it's always fun when I work with him. It's impressive, his improv skills. Everything's just on the fly. So
that's so wild. I had no idea how much it was just like off the cuff, like just him making it. It's so clean and like precise in the final, but it's just, well, and it's funny, like even interviewing him, I can see where, you know, he's so good. He's so articulate. Like, it makes sense that he just like can pull that out.
Yeah, it's really impressive because we don't ever plan anything. Out of all the episodes like that we worked on, none of it's planned. Like, everything's on the fly, and we get it done like that. Our last episode literally took 20 minutes.
Wow.
Like, it was...
Hold up. Okay. It took 20 minutes. How long was the finished product?
I think, like, I would say, like, probably 6-7 minutes or something.
That's amazing.
Yeah, like, it was just all on the fly. So...
It takes me that long to get a scripted thing talking to camera done that long, but he can just create an entire piece of comedy in 20 minutes.
Like, all of that, I don't know what he's going to say, and I just go with the flow. I just sit there and wait and see what he says, and then I try my best not to laugh during it.
Yeah.
Because, like, it just hits me by surprise. So, like, stuff he thinks of, and I'm just like, can't laugh. We're on
film. Well, it also makes sense to me now why he's able to do the live shows, because if the whole thing's improv anyway, he's just doing improv in front of people at that point.
Yeah, but I mean that's still like a whole thing.
It's
deal with people talking, you have to deal with hecklers, like,
yeah,
people's obviously, I mean, it's such a great skill. You just always have to be on your A game all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been great working with him, and it's perfect because, you know, it helps. It's in the same lane of what I've been doing, and this is a fun, creative way for me to still get to do what I want to do, but not be so far off from what I've been building my whole life, career-wise.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's on brand for you.
Yes, very much so, and it's... Yeah, that, and also because I am also working with the Mayweather channel.
That was gonna be my next question. Talk to me about that. How's that been with creating content for the Mayweather channel?
So they are, like, you know, still in the early phases. I'm very lucky to be their official LA content creator. So we're just getting stuff done, making sure we get funding and stuff like that, and just grind at it until it gets where we want it to be. But I am very lucky to work with someone like, you know, the Mayweather family, as they're just legends.
Yeah.
And because of that, it helps build a lot of new connections. It's nice to have someone backing me, because I'm not the type of person that likes to go out and talk, like go hit up people like, hey, can I interview you? Right. Like, I hate that. It's not really a thing that I like doing or asking to collaborate, but because of them, it makes it so much easier. I get to collaborate with people and work with people because of the Mayweather name. So it's also on brand with me because it has to do with martial arts, and they also give me the freedom to do what I want because they're trying to branch out as well. So they just have their martial arts base, like the boxing base, and then everything else comes with it, which is great. So it's been nice. I definitely enjoy content creating. That is the goal besides acting. You know, I do want to focus on being able to just create content and live off that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Master Ken, Matt, is the inspiration. This is what he does. You know, it's always something I've wanted to do. I've always wanted YouTube since I was young. But when YouTube first started out, when it even got invented, I wanted to do it. But at the time, it was just, I was so lost to what I should be doing.
Yeah.
So I never did.
Well, sounds like you have some direction now with it, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Where do you see your content with the Mayweather channel going?
It's going to still be the same. It's the same. They really give me freedom of what I do. So it's going to be a mix of martial arts stuff, and it's just going to be a mix of fun stuff too. I'm just going to do what I want with these people, go on adventures, do some challenges, like stuff that I would normally do anyways in my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Stuff that I would normally do on my channel. It's basically my channel, but with them. It's a collab with them. So it's, yeah, they really
get... Also, is great because that's legitimately, like, people always talk about exposure, but that's actual exposure for you and your channel with, like, creating with them.
Yeah, which is great. So I'm like, I've just been focused on that. And it's a great way for me to also practice my acting, because a lot of actors just sit around and they just wait to be booked. They're just waiting for that next audition. And there's no guarantee that you're going to get booked, you know? Like, so this is just stay busy. You always have to have projects, have stuff going on.
100%.
And this is the perfect type of thing where I still get to be creative and use my time wisely that still is related to acting and keeps me in the loop and also builds my fan base and builds things that I want to build for my career.
100%. I love that. I mean, it's kind of what this podcast is for me, because I run a production company for my, you know, for the full-time job. And this is when, you know, work slows down a little bit, or, you know, even when I get busy now that this is going, it's, you know, just another cool thing to kind of network and collaborate with people that I, you know, wouldn't have done otherwise, which is super fun. So it keeps you in a constant state of creativity and making stuff. And, you know, and I think a great quote I heard from actually the first episode of this was, work begets work. So the more that you're putting stuff out, the more opportunities can come to you.
Exactly. Especially when it's a creative field, like the creating never stops.
Right.
And it's like, I think another thing why I enjoy the creating so much, because you keep having all these little projects or goals, little mini goals. And every time you accomplish one, it's like, oh, look, here we go. This is my thing. And you just add into the bank of your life. And it's good to be able to look back at it. It's good to be able to learn from it. And the creating is a never-ending process. So it's something that is very enjoyable to have. And when even worst case scenario, if nothing comes from it, it's like I can look back at my life and be like, you know, my life was very fun and rich because
you,
of all
you made things. Cool shit.
Yeah, exactly. You made cool shit. I could die there happy. You know?
That's like my entire Twitch schedule is literally just making cool shit. That's literally what it's time
for.
I know you said you had 45 minutes. I don't want to, do you still have some time or do you need to get going?
Yeah, I probably get like another 5 minutes.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, we'll do quick fire round. So, what piece of advice would you give to yourself from 10 years ago?
Don't doubt yourself. Just go for it. I seriously regret like sitting here wavering back and forth thinking I need to go please other people. But really, you have to do it for yourself.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'd be much further along if I just chased what I wanted like at the start.
Yeah. That you're never going to go wrong with going after what you enjoy. What's one of your favorite quotes and why do you love it?
Live your life without regret. But I have a different take on that. Okay. Most people, when they say live your life without regret, they think of it like, oh, I already did it. It's been done. Nothing I can do about it. Don't dwell on it. I don't believe in that. I believe when I say live my life without regret, I mean you do everything you can at 100%. So that way, when you look back on it, you can't regret that you never tried hard enough.
Right.
So I'm very big on 100%. So that way you can't sit back and regret your life about what I should have, would have, could have.
And because it's on the internet, it is your legacy is like cemented with all the stuff, you know, all the stuff that you've tried and gone after, which is so cool.
Yeah, it's like your little history book.
Yeah, exactly. this one might be hard, so if you don't have an answer off the top of your head, it's okay. What is the title of your memoir?
title of my memoir. Let's see. Ooh. Life with a Bang.
That's so good.
Life with a Bang.
Oh my God. And it rhymes. That might have to be. It's funny. Every time I bring this up, most of the time, it's probably going to be the title of the podcast.
Perfect.
Unless ChatGPT can come up with something better, which it rarely does. I might add on it, but that's fantastic. So outside of your career and kind of your creative space, what's a hobby that kind of lets you takes you away from it all?
I think I really enjoy traveling. It's crazy. I've been very lucky to travel most of my life. At this point, I've been to over 50 countries.
And that's okay. But I like traveling too, but like that's actual numbers.
Yeah, I've traveled a lot. And a lot of those countries I've actually stayed for a while. It's not just like a few days. You know,
so
I've stayed like a month or so, you know, or even to a year.
Yeah.
And other ones. But traveling, it just opens up your mind so much. And I think I enjoy it so much because I enjoy people, like their thought process. I'm very much a INFJ personality type. I'm a thinker. I like to think real deep, and talking to people and seeing their viewpoints,
yeah,
it's very interesting to me. So it's nice to meet people from other countries and understanding the way they grew up and stuff. So that is probably why I enjoy traveling so much, and also the food.
Perspective in food, you can't really go wrong either way there. So to wrap it up, I'll kind of roll out the red carpet for you, let everybody know what you got going on in your life.
I am, you know, working on doing more film stuff, and I'm still going to be wrestling. Right now I'm kind of injured, but I'm getting better, so I've been doing that and just focus on my content right now, because it's the only thing that I can do right now that's
there,
not wrestling. And you know, waiting on
for any wrestling fans, is there any timeline on your return?
You know, I'm not sure. I would say maybe a month or so. I've been doing
that's not bad
therapy exercises. Yeah, but I've been out for like 5 months at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a while. So I'm ready to get back in, but it's ultimately kind of up to my body. I just got to listen to it and see where it's at. I'm push it however much I can push it without damaging it more. So just doing that. And if I do go back, I am going to go back, but the soonest I'm going to go back most likely would probably be with Championship Wrestling, because that's the company I'm mainly wrestling with. And just stay up on all my stuff on my social media, Zeta underscore Zhang, Z-E-D-A underscore Z-H-A-N-G on Instagram. And in my bio, there's all my other stuff like TikTok and Patreon and stuff. And I usually keep people up to date on what's going on, because it's forever changing.
Yeah, of course.
There's always stuff coming up, you know.
You're never going to stop doing
stuff. I could be doing one thing, and then next thing you know, some other opportunity comes up. I'm like, all right, doing this thing right now.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I will definitely link all of your info in the show notes. And just thank you so much for your time and the story. And this has been super cool.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thanks so
Absolutely.
Much. I had fun talking to you.
And for everybody watching and listening, I will see you next time.